Calls are growing for further investigation into JEA. Good morning and live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead this hour, we speak with the head of the Duval County Democratic Party about the JEA scandal. Who do you think needs to investigate? Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later in the hour, a conversation with attorney and activist Rob Balot. Balot is the inspiration behind the new Mark Ruffalo film, Dark Waters. That's later. But first this morning, the Duval County Democratic Party is calling on State Attorney Melissa Nelson to recuse herself from investigating JEA. Nelson's office is looking into controversies around the aborted push to sell the utility. They will eventually issue a report, but the state attorney says there will be no grand jury investigation into the scandal. What's next with this? Well, Daniel Henry chairs the Duval Dems, and he's on the line with more about his organization's stance. Daniel, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much, Melissa.
And what are your questions for Daniel Henry and your thoughts about further investigation into JEA? Join us. Give us a call at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax, and we're already getting your Facebook comments. Okay, so Daniel Henry, Nelson's office the other day said they will not undertake a grand jury investigation into JEA, but that they will continue looking at the matter and issue a report. You're not satisfied with that. Why?
Well, first, I really appreciate you giving me the opportunity to be on this, on your show today, because I think this issue is very important. So, obviously, after Councilman Matt Carlucci met with State Attorney Melissa Nelson on Friday, we learned through him that she's not considering a grand jury investigation at this time and that she is looking into this matter internally. But at the same time, we also learned that political strategist Tim Baker, who obviously has ties to the administration, but more importantly, was one of the key strategists that helped Melissa Nelson get elected in 2016, was intimately involved with a lot of the sales negotiations that JEA was having over the course of this past couple months, particularly at the behest of Aaron Zahn. So when you're talking about an investigation at this magnitude, where hundreds of millions of dollars were on the table for the city to be either getting or using, you want to ensure that everyone in this city has faith in the results of that investigation when it's presented to the public. And for Melissa Nelson, we're not questioning her integrity. We're not saying that she is incapable of doing an investigation. We're simply saying that in the past, when she recognized that there was an appearance of impropriety, or there were potential conflicts within her office or for herself, that she recused herself. The best example of that was the Matt Shirk grand jury investigation that occurred just this year alone. So
the former public defender, Matt Shirk, yeah.
Exactly. So for a case like that, which really dealt with issues that are in less magnitude than JEA, and she requested that the governor recuse her in that case, all we're asking is for her to consider those same implications that are in front of her and really consider if it's in the best interest of this city, which we believe it is, that the JEA investigation, criminal in nature, has the full faith of the public.
It's 549-2937. Let us know your thoughts on calls for further investigation into last year's aborted push to sell off JEA. So, Daniel, we reached out to the state attorney's office, and they don't really have a public statement other than what they've already issued, which is that they're looking into the matter. Who, if Melissa Nelson were to recuse, who, in your view, should be investigating?
I leave that up to the governor. Obviously, this is a prosecutorial choice. Normally, in the past, whenever either Melissa Nelson recused herself or her predecessor, Angela Corey, recused herself, both Governor Scott and Governor DeSantis have seemed to appoint a state attorney in a neighboring judicial circuit. I think that's partly due to the resources and the availability of witnesses that they may need to call on in order to complete their investigation. So I would assume that that would be the course of action that the governor's office would take.
Okay. And you chair the Duval County Democratic Party. You are calling for an investigation, an independent investigation. The subtext of your stance, I think some observers might say, is that you're calling on an investigation into primarily Republican officials. What would you say to those who see just partisanship in your motivation here?
I think that's a fair question to ask, but I would turn that on its head. These are elected officials, regardless of their political party, that represent us at a local level. And most citizens, in my opinion, either if they're Democrat, Republican, or independent, want their public officials to look in their best interest, regardless of the politics. So going back to what we're asking for, when you look at a case like JEA that has put, frankly, the administration, city council, and JEA executives in a firestorm of criticism from government agencies, from the city's ethics director, from the city's inspector general, from city council itself, from the public, from news organizations for their lack of transparency, for the appearance of self-dealing, you want to ensure that regardless of whose party affiliation someone may have, if they're an elected official, that they're doing their best to serve the interests of the public. I feel I have an obligation, regardless of whether or not I'm a political party chair, to speak to that if no one else is going to do so. So the fact that I'm a party chair, frankly, I use that as my voice to speak on an issue that crosses the political spectrum, in my opinion.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking about calls for further investigation into JEA. What are your thoughts? We'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937 as we speak with Danielle Henry of the Duval Dems. Danielle, at the same time that you're calling for this, we learned this week that a special JEA board meeting to look at the specifics around the firing of former CEO Aaron Zahn, that meeting has been postponed at the request of the city's Office of General Counsel. They were going to meet today and figure out what to do about Aaron Zahn, whether to give him a big golden parachute up to $800,000 in public money or not. But the city attorneys say they need more time to look at this. What are your thoughts about that aspect of the story?
I don't want to be cynical. I think everyone in Jacksonville is waiting on bated breath to see what the general counsel's office is going to present to the board. Ultimately, I think we always have to remember history. When the JEA board met in December to consider Aaron Zahn's termination, a lot of us were very concerned at the fact that OGC was giving the board advice that they didn't have cause to fire Aaron Zahn, which most elected officials in Jacksonville, particularly city council, would disagree with you with. So whenever April Green, who was the chair of the board, tried to make the motion to terminate Aaron Zahn with cause, you sensed a lot of pushback from OGC that they wouldn't be able to do that. So they gave them the two-week period that they specifically asked for in order for them to complete the investigation. And now and behold, 2 weeks later, we're learning that they need more time to complete that investigation. So I appreciate the fact that they're looking into it. I'm really looking forward to see what the results are. I think we all can agree that Aaron Zahn has multiple reasons for cause that the board can fire him, whether it was going out of the board's purview to open solicitations for bids or starting the process to do that, or whether you're talking about the incentive plan or a number of other things. But ultimately, the board is going to have to make a decision as to how they're going to handle Aaron Zahn's employment issue. And I hope that they do the best interest in the city and revoke his contract and fire him for cause.
Okay, as this is all going on, at the same time, there have been calls to look at the charter, Jacksonville's document that sets up its government structure, calls to change the way JEA board members are appointed, calls to change the way the city's Office of General Counsel operates. Do you think that the city of Jacksonville needs to change its charter in the wake of this scandal?
I think it does. And today, city council members have led on that issue, or going to be leading on that issue. I know Councilman Garrett Dennis just had a public meeting at City Hall yesterday that was well attended by many of his colleagues to specifically speak on that issue as to splitting the board members' appointment powers by half being the mayor at 4 and the other remaining 3 by city council. I think that's a good start. When you look at other independent authorities within the city, like DIA or JTA or even the port, many of those boards, including the airport as well, do not have the mayor as the single authority as making the appointments for those seats. So with all that we've seen in JEA for the past year and a half, I think that's an important step to ensure that there's some level of fairness in terms of government entities being able to appoint members to these boards. Ultimately, they're independent and they're beholden to the interest of the public. But I think that is one step to ensure that any administration now or in the future has less control over the dealings at JEA.
It's 549-2937 to join us. Lots of comments on our Facebook page. Sherry writes, the corruption here in this city is deep. Matthew says, when are the people going to demand that this mayor step down? Let me get you on the record on that, Daniel Henry of the Duval Dems. There have been scattered calls for beginning a recall effort against Mayor Curry in the wake of this scandal and other allegations of corruption or questionable matters in his second term. Where do you stand on that?
When it comes to recalling the mayor, it's definitely something that we're considering. I'm not going to
considering
make
how. What do you mean by that?
I think everyone has heard talk about that particular option. I'm not saying on the air right now that that's something we're going to do today, but I think it would be irresponsible for me not to at least look at it. So we're just looking at it.
And by looking at it, you mean what? Because it's my understanding that to begin a recall effort against a public official here, you need something like 60,000 signatures. How could that even be accomplished when in the last election we saw under 20% turnout of the voters?
You did. And that's why I'm saying I'm looking at it. Obviously, when you're doing something of this magnitude that in my my knowledge has not occurred in this city in recent memory, it's a huge undertaking. So I think it's something that I'm considering. I'm not saying we're doing it today, but it's definitely something that I'm looking into and seeing what the implications would be for something of that nature.
And if you were to undertake this in earnest, what would you say to someone you were trying to get to sign the petition? What would the argument be?
Today, right now, do you have faith that the mayor's office, that this city government is looking out for your best interest? And when you look at many of the scandals that have occurred within the not even a year of this administration, whether or not that's the Kip Holtz Alliance, whether or not that's JEA, two examples of large scandals that still have major implications for this city moving forward. I think we have to show and give people an opportunity to give their voice. You are right. Obviously, we did have low turnout in the municipal election, but people always have a way of speaking and giving their voice when they want to. And when you look at all of the public participation when it comes to issues like JEA, I think it's mobilized the city in a way that everyone is paying attention to their public officials and the decisions that they make. And that's a good thing. So it's definitely something to consider, but I can't give you an answer on the air right now.
Okay, you mentioned the Kids Hope Alliance. Let's talk about that as well, because we're getting calls about that matter. Let's talk about the latest on that. There's an inspector general investigation into the suspension of KHA chair Joe Peppers. He was placed on administrative leave in running the agency some months back. He has accused the city of pressuring him to commit procurement fraud. The city claims he acted improperly on the job. More shoes to drop there. What are your calls as we speak with Daniel Henry of the Duval Dems? They're calling for State Attorney Melissa Nelson to recuse herself in investigating JEA. It's 549-2937. Tom is on the west side. Hi, Tom. Good morning.
Yes, I was going to mention the Kids Hope Alliance, and also I wanted to ask if he was favoring investigations into the scandal involving the seeking of consulting contracts that was surrounding the mayor's office.
Okay. Yeah, so there are three things at issue here. Thank you for that, Tom. There's JEA. There's the ongoing matter of the leadership of the Kids Hope Alliance. And eyebrows were also raised when former top aide to the mayor, Sam Moussa, landed a hefty consulting contract right after leaving city government. And as you pointed out, Daniel, another close associate of the mayor, a political strategist and a lobbyist named Tim Baker, we learned from the Times Union, sat in on private JEA meetings where the privatization scheme was strategized. So there are three different issues before the voters to kind of ponder and look at. What about Tom's question? What are your thoughts?
There's an additional one, too. You also have to remember that Moussa has $100,000 contract with the mayor's office to provide consulting for a year as well. So there are many avenues that close associates of the mayor's office has found to profit off taxpayers. It's definitely something that needs to be investigated. When you see issues, like an example, when Aaron Zahn awarded the lobbying contract to a lobbying group, a principal of which he has a property investment that he's currently out for bid for, trying to seek sales solicitations for, it presents a place where it seems that there's solicitation going on within this government. It presents the idea that certain people are favored in getting contracts. And all of these things need to be investigated. I know that obviously the Kids Hope Alliance is something that I came on your show and I talked about earlier this year. And I'm glad that you brought that issue right back up, because it's something that shouldn't go away and people need to be asking questions about, particularly when you see a continued pattern. The one thing I'd also like to point out is the Kids Hope Alliance, JEA, each one of their CEOs, Aaron John and Joe Peppers, both received their positions in the same manner. They were board members first for a short period of time, then they resigned, then the boards that they used to sit on appointed them to the position of CEO of that organization, against the fact that there were other applicants that were well than qualified and more than qualified than those individuals to be placed in those positions. So all of these create a pattern of behavior that I think needs a broader investigation to see how the mayor's office comports.
Do you think that a federal investigation is needed?
I do, and I said that on your show too as well. But if this mayor's office, I don't want to seem like I'm picking on anyone, but it's a matter of fact. If we continue to see a pattern of behavior where Baker, where Moussa, where the mayor's office, where Joe Peppers, where Aaron Zahn, all public officials, all profiting off of the purse, all receiving contracts that place into question whether or not they are fairly awarded, or frankly, if they were awarded in the first place, it really comes to a question as to why are they receiving them, what are the motives for why they are receiving these dollars, and if you think about it, these are millions of dollars that we're talking about. Not to kind of continue talking, but even with the school board sales tax referendum, New Times Union gave reports on how Baker and Moussa tried to get $450,000 from the school board to try to consult for them. So you see it almost as a pattern of business, particularly for
some individuals within the city to try to profit off of taxpayer dollars.
Caetano is in Arlington. Caetano, good morning. Go ahead. Caetano, you're on the air.
Oh, sorry. I didn't know that. Hello. I was going to also bring up the departure of the former head of the Downtown Investment Authority after the DIA had looked for, had put out an RFP for a new convention center, because immediately after they put out the new RFPs and actually got proposals, the mayor had removed the head, replaced him with one of his political insiders, and had canceled the search for the convention center, but they still ended up blowing up the City Hall Annex building anyway. And I just wanted to ask if there were any thoughts about that.
Okay, thanks for that. Daniel?
There were definitely talks, thoughts about that. That does bring an important question as to the circumstances of why that occurred, because I think, Melissa, you've joked about this before. You've got an extended lawn on your the riverbank of the city close to your office, because there continues to be empty parcels within Jacksonville that are blown up buildings, buildings of great stature and have a lot of significance to the city that, frankly, the public does not know what will ultimately end up on those pieces of land. So these are all questions that need to be investigated. And you continue to talk about DIA, when you have a former board member that is pitching a contract for parking, contracts to be taken over by his entity. These are things, and being investigated again to kind of square the circle by Tim Baker. You start to see a pattern, regardless of whether or not it's the DIA, it's JEA, it's any other issues that are kind of going around the city. There's a pattern in terms of who ends up being involved one way or another and who profits from it.
We'll continue to follow this. In the meantime, we thank you for joining the show. Daniel, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Daniel Henry chairs the Duval County Democratic Party. And up next, attorney and author Rob Balot. Balot is the subject of the new film Dark Waters, and he's led a 20-year fight against dangerous chemicals, chemicals that are in every one of us. We'll explain as we speak with Balot next. Back in a moment.
For 25 years, WJCT's radio reading service has been providing daily readings of your local paper, the Florida Times-Union. Perhaps you have blindness or need help reading the paper. You can listen to it being read online at wjct.org/radio reading. Or we'll send you a radio tuned to radio reading service. It's free because radio reading gives voice to the printed word. Call 904-358-6308.
Welcome back. Well, corporate defense attorney Rob Balot began his career at a prominent Cincinnati law firm, and he spent the bulk of his time defending large chemical companies, helping them navigate environmental regulations. But all that changed when a West Virginia farmer asked for Rob's help. Hundreds of cows were dying on his property. Eventually, Balot would switch sides, and he'd go on to spend the next 20 years taking on DuPont. First, for the pollution to Wilbur Tennant's farm, then to expose contamination that he learned had affected an entire town. And eventually, he'd move on to holding the chemical industry accountable for dangerous chemicals called PFOAs. They're called forever chemicals, and they're in every single one of us. Balot's story is told in the film Dark Waters, starring Mark Ruffalo. Let's listen.
How many did you lose?
190.
190 cows.
You tell me nothing's wrong here. That's chemicals, I'm telling you.
I'm seeing documents. I don't understand.
They're hiding something.
That chemical.
What if you drank it?
Drank it? It's like saying, what if I swallowed a tire?
What if whatever's killing those cows is in the drinking water?
You knew.
Still, you did nothing.
You want to flush your career down the toilet for some cowhand?
You want to take everything that you know and turn it against an iconic American company like an informant. Isn't that right? Isn't that right? Isn't that right?
Yes.
They have all the money, all the firepower, and they'll use it. I know. I was one of them. Our government is captive to DuPont. They're trying to force you to make me stop.
He was willing to risk his job, his family, for a stranger who needed his help.
The system is rigged. They want us to think it'll protect us. We protect us. We do.
So that's the film. But in addition to the movie, Rob is also the author of a book called Exposure, Poisoned Water, Corporate Greed, and One Lawyer's 20-Year Battle Against DuPont. Rob Balot joins us now by phone from Ohio. Rob, good to talk to you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being with us. And what are your questions about PFOAs? They're also known as forever chemicals. If you've ever used a Teflon pan, you have been exposed to PFOAs, but they have gotten into our bodies in lots of other ways as well. So as we speak with Rob Balot, give us a call. It's 549-2937 to join us. Now, Rob, I really enjoyed the movie and seeing your story told. Let's go back to how this all began. In 2016, the New York Times ran a story on you, and the headline was, "The Lawyer Who Became DuPont's Worst Nightmare." That sparked the interest of Hollywood, correct?
That's right. After that story came out in January of 2016, Mark Ruffalo actually got a copy of the article. A couple people sent it to him, and he was reading through it and was apparently, you know, pretty surprised that contamination on this kind of scale and scope was going on in our country in modern times, and he had never heard of it. He was very active in water rights and you know, trying to protect the environment, and these were stories that were of particular interest to him. So he reached out to me after reading that article and wanted to see whether there were ways to bring that story to a wider audience, get the word out about what was happening. And at that point, it was still happening in our country.
Mm-hmm. And so he descended on Cincinnati with a film crew, and away you went. You and your wife, Sarah, are portrayed in the film. What was it like to have Mark Ruffalo play you?
Well, it was pretty surreal. that's definitely the case. You know, just a wonderful guy, though, and just very passionate, dedicated to making sure the story was done the right way, making sure that the people that were involved were portrayed accurately, you know, not just my family, but also the people in Parkersburg and the people that really suffered through this for 20 years. You know, and he teamed up with Todd Haynes, the director, was just a fantastic person, and the entire crew, really. People from Participant and later Focus Features. This really was a tremendous group of people who really put it together the right way, and I think did a great job in showing how something like this impacts the people involved.
That's right. And the movie was great. I really enjoyed it. But at the same time, I really recommend that people pick up a copy of your book, Exposure. This is your story about your 20-year battle against DuPont. Most people just don't realize the health threat that they're facing from this class of industrial chemicals. Can you explain a little bit more what you learned about PFOAs or PFAs? There are a few acronyms for this chemical and why they're so dangerous to us.
Sure. You know, like you mentioned, Mia, most people, I think, listening have heard of the Flint water crisis. You know, we're all familiar with that situation, which was one community with one chemical in the water. You know, here we're talking about contamination of virtually the entire planet. You know, water supplies not just all over the United States, but all over the world, and in the blood of virtually every living creature on the planet, including, you know, 99% of people. And what we're talking about here are completely man-made synthetic chemicals, chemicals that didn't exist on the planet prior to World War II, invented by 3M right after the war. One of these chemicals, PFOA, was sold by 3M to DuPont, who then used it beginning as early as 1951, you know, to start making Teflon. It was used in the manufacturing process. And this was decades before there was a US EPA, decades before there were regulations in our country about, you know, looking into the health effects of chemicals before they're put out onto the market. So, you know, for decades, this stuff was pumped out into the environment, pumped out the stacks of the plant where they were making Teflon and Parkersburg, pumped into the Ohio River. And, you know, these chemicals are particularly unusual. They have a unique chemical structure of carbons and fluorines that make them extremely difficult to break down. So once they get out in the environment, they virtually stay there forever. They don't break down under natural conditions. We hear them referenced now as forever chemicals because of that. So once they get out there, they stay out there. And not only do they stay out in the environment, they have this unusual ability to get into living things. They get into the blood and stick, so to speak, to our blood, where they build up. You know, even the tiniest amounts that we're exposed to can build up in our blood to higher and higher levels over time. And what we now know, you know, going through all the documents that the companies have had for decades, doing studies on monkeys and rats and in humans as well, you know, these things are toxic, cause cancer, have all kinds of different health effects. And unfortunately, that was known by the companies for quite some time, and the rest of us, only through this litigation, you know, where we dug all these documents out, so the rest of us now finally becoming aware of it.
We should know
that we've been exposed for decades.
That's right. We should note that DuPont has never admitted wrongdoing and has issued a statement saying that they stand by their company's operations. But that said, DuPont picked the wrong guy, I think, to do a document dump on. Because as we learn in the film and also in your book, you had the patience and the tenacity to go through millions of documents. Box after box of decades of documents to eventually find the little needles in that big haystack, the documents that showed DuPont's malfeasance. And that you went on to win a record settlement against the company, $670 million. But what I really am curious to ask you about now is your latest move, because you are charging ahead, representing basically every human being on this planet who has been exposed to these chemicals. In effect, you are, what I see you doing, Rob, is you are doing the EPA's job for them. One person. You are stepping in where the EPA should be and trying to force accountability and awareness and potentially regulation of these chemicals. So can you explain a little bit more about the latest action that you filed and what you're doing?
Yeah, you know, after it took 20 years to get the information out about PFOA and its health effects and finally started, you know, pushing the regulators to step in and start, you know, starting the process to regulate, as you indicated, unfortunately, the agencies are still moving extremely slow on being able to regulate these materials. But what we've learned is not only is PFOA out there, but there are a number of these related PFAS chemicals, chemicals in the same man-made family of chemicals. There are hundreds, if not thousands of them, completely unregulated. And as we find out that these chemicals also are in our water, in our blood, coming from things like firefighting foams or other materials, that what we're hearing from the companies is what we were hearing from DuPont 20 years ago. Well, you just don't have any evidence that they're causing harm. So what I've done is I filed a new case in Ohio late last year seeking to bring a class action on behalf of everyone in the country who has these chemicals in their blood. And the object is not for money, not for to get money damages for people at this point, but to force the scientific studies to be done and to have the companies that are pumping these chemicals out and getting them out into our environment, into us, have them be the ones who have to pay for independent scientists to do the science and to do the studies to tell us exactly mm-hmm. what these are going to do to us.
Right.
You know, the taxpayer shouldn't be paying for that. The
right.
company should be paying for that.
And you mentioned firefighting foam. In 1993, there was a huge petroleum fire on Talleyrand Avenue in Jacksonville. The fire department
right.
dumped a ton of foam on this huge blaze to put it out. It had the chemical in it. Much of it went into the St. John's River. Thousands of birds were killed. Some humans were sickened. Fast forward to today, the Department of Defense has actually identified nearly two dozen shallow water monitoring wells in this area that are contaminated with the firefighting foam chemicals. DOD test results showed all 17 wells had levels well above the EPA's recommended level of 70 parts per trillion, and they are studying this situation at several military bases, including right here in Jacksonville. I want to ask you about that in a moment, but first let's go to some calls for corporate attorney Rob Ballot. He is the inspiration behind the Mark Ruffalo film Dark Waters. John is in Avondale. Hi, John. Good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Good morning. My question for the attorney is about whether fluoride in the water supplies is carcinogenic to humans. It's a very popular additive that city governments have put in the public water supply for supposed dental health benefits.
John, thanks for that question. Rob, fluoride.
Sure. And actually, the chemicals we're talking about have a fluorine atom, and it's organic fluorine. So these chemicals, for example, overexposure can blacken your teeth, as you see in the movie, can turn the cow's teeth black, for example. And the fluoride that I believe is used to put into drinking water, over the years to fluoridate the water, is inorganic fluoride. So I think there are slightly different materials, and I'm not as familiar with the inorganic aspects of fluoride. But I know that there's a debate going on right now about that issue as well.
Hmm.
But my focus has been on this organic type of fluoride, the man-made version that's showing up in these chemicals.
But, his question brings up a larger issue for me that I wanted to touch on with you, which is that there are tens of thousands of chemicals that we're being exposed to all the time that are not regulated,
right.
and we have no idea of their health effects. Isn't that right?
That's true. One of the things that really was a bit of an eye-opener for me when I started this project, for years I was working, and still I'm at the same firm, but for the first 8 years or so of my career, I was working representing chemical companies, and my understanding was there was this world of toxic chemicals, and I assumed that the things that were bad were the ones that were regulated. We had rules and regulations about those, and if it wasn't on those lists, it was okay. And what we've seen and learned, unfortunately, through the case of the PFAS chemical contamination is it's not necessarily the case. It simply means that the regulators may not have been aware of these chemicals. There were tens of thousands of chemicals that were pumped out into the environment way before the first regulations came out in 1976 in the United States regulating these chemicals. And the regulations really kind of focused on new chemicals coming out after that point. And for these existing chemicals like PFOA and PFAS materials, it was up to the companies that were using those to alert the EPA if they found information suggesting harm. So if the companies, as we saw with PFOA, if the companies chose not to tell the agency, they went unregulated. And essentially none of us knew about those health problems until somebody found out about them.
Right. And so do you think then that the EPA is simply not performing its role as intended? The EPA, of course, is a controversial agency. For every person that thinks they're not regulating enough, there's someone out there who thinks that they are onerous and over-regulating companies. So
right.
What about that?
Well, I think it's an extremely difficult problem. We were talking about an agency that has enormous responsibilities. You know, when we're talking about tens of thousands of chemicals, and, you know, an agency that, frankly, a lot of times is understaffed, the budgets are being cut, and they rely upon the companies to tell them and to provide them information. And unfortunately, when you have a situation like this where a company knows about health information and chooses not to tell the agency or misleads them, then you have this problem. And it basically falls through the cracks. And to try to then force the agency to go back and begin regulating something like that, as we've seen, is almost impossible. This has been going on now for almost 20 years. And we still do not have federal regulations for this chemical, PFOA, even though we probably have more information now about this chemical than virtually any other chemical out there,
yeah,
including massive human studies. And we still can't get that regulated now. It's a very difficult, slow process.
The buyer must beware. Just the other day, I went to Target to buy some non-stick pans because I wanted to make sure that I didn't have any PFOA-containing pans in my kitchen, thanks to you. And I noticed that some of them are labeled PFOA or PFTE-free. So you have to read labels now. You know, and you mentioned Taft. You've been with the firm since law school. I should disclose that Rob and I went to high school together, and I've known
That's
him
right.
since the early 1980s. So I'm really excited to have you on the show, Rob. I think the last time I saw you was either in Dayton or Cincinnati. I think we had lunch together right when you were starting at the law firm. My memory's a little hazy, but I think that's the last time I saw you. And you've been with the same firm now for decades, and I think it says a lot about Taft that they stuck by you through this incredible journey, because a lot of other firms might not have. And because of that, and because of your dedication and your work, you've hopefully made the world safer for everyone, because I know you will not give up in your quest to hold these companies accountable and get this information out to the public. So I recommend people check out the movie and buy Rob's book, Exposure, and learn more about this public health issue, because it's affecting every single human being on this planet, as Rob has learned. And so, Rob Balot, thank you so much for being on the show, and I will be following your progress from afar as you continue on this quest. Thank you again for being with us.
Thanks. It was great talking to you.
You too. A quick break. And up next, a look at National Take the Stairs Day. Don't take the elevator at work today. We'll tell you why.
Times has praised Stefan Jakiv's remarkable purity of tone, which he couples with the controlled intensity this concerto demands. Happy New Year, I'm Courtney Lewis. Our season-long celebration of Beethoven continues with his violin concerto. The symphony is joined by violin phenom Stefan Jakiv on January 10th and 11th. Tickets and more at jacksymphony.org.
That phase one trade deal last month, the markets kind of yawned. The news from the Middle East the past couple of days.
Then the eventual outcome is hard to anticipate and comes as a surprise. The market does react.
I'm Kai Rizdal. When the markets know and when they don't. next time on Marketplace.
Today at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
After chronicling the lives of girls for 25 years, Peggy Orenstein has turned her attention to boys in the Me Too era and how they're constrained by gender roles and ideals of masculinity. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with her about her new book, Boys and Sex, Young Men on Hookups, Love, Porn, Consent, and Navigating the New Masculinity. Join us. Today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
As tensions with Tehran escalate, are Iranian Americans being singled out by the Border Patrol? Some say they were held for more than 10 hours as they tried to re-enter the country over the weekend. Customs and Border Protection denies those reports. I'm Todd Zwillick. Who's being put under suspicion as the country prepares for confrontation? That's next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, today is National Take the Stairs Day, so ditch the elevator and get a little exercise on the stairs at your company or wherever you might be. Here now with more on Take the Stairs Day and the upcoming Fight for Air Climb, we welcome Karen Hughes with the American Lung Association and firefighter Matt Kramer. He's with the Jacksonville Association of Firefighters. Hey, guys. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
All right. Good to see you both. Today, January 8th, is National Take the Stairs Day. So the American Lung Association is challenging all of us to ditch the elevator. Karen, how did this all come about? How did this day take shape?
Yeah, National Take the Stairs Day has been around for a long time, and it really is a great time, I think, especially being in the beginning of the new year, to remind folks that health is important, lung health is important, and there's simple things that we can do every day. And so It's a great day for us to encourage folks, you know, park a little further away when you're going somewhere, and if you're in a building, whether it's residential or your workplace, and there's an elevator or there's a choice, take the stairs.
Right. Just build a little more movement into your day wherever you happen to be.
Absolutely. And stairs are a great way to do that.
Okay. Now, Matt, the Fight for Air Climb is also coming up. That is Saturday, February 1st at the Bank of America Tower, when hundreds of supporters of the American Lung Association will climb more than 35 flights of stairs, including you. And it's my understanding you will be in your full JFRD gear when you climb. Is that right?
Yes, ma'am. That's correct. And if you could imagine, you know, climbing 35, 40 flights of stairs alone is a tough task to try to complete. Now I had about 100 pounds worth of gear, and that's something we do on a daily basis. When we respond to some of these high rises, it's a reality that we can't take the elevator. And
that's
now
we gotta
hike 40 flights of stairs.
And you gotta be in shape.
You would prefer to be.
How many pounds will you be carrying on your back if you climb with all your gear on?
The average weight of a firefighter's gear, if you take away some people carry extra stuff in their pockets, is roughly anywhere between 75 to 100 pounds, including the full gear and an air pack.
So, wow. And so local firehouses will be joining you. They're going to climb too.
Yes, ma'am. Right? We're going to have anywhere between roughly 75 to 100 firefighters from Jacksonville and various counties coming in to support and join this climb. Is not only is it a reality for us, but it's almost like we pay our homage to those on 9/11, that it makes us kind of humbles us that, okay, for what's 40 flights when those guys were hiking 80 to 90 flights of stairs?
So yeah, sure.
We'll get it done one way or the other.
We need to point out, too, that heroes like you, firefighters, have an increased risk for lung disease because you're exposed to gases, chemicals, and smoke in the line of duty.
Yes, ma'am. Cancer awareness in the fire service has been a huge issue lately, and it's something that the American Lung Association, you know, is trying to recognize us and help us fight that fight.
Yeah. And we were just talking about the dangers of PFOA chemicals. Firefighters are exposed to those in the form of firefighting foam and the materials even in their uniforms. And so with all of that said, Karen, the fight for air climb is really a way to support the American Lung Association too, correct?
It is. This will be our 12th annual Fight for Air Climb in the Jacksonville community. We typically have over 500 people show up. And again, that's on February the 1st this year. About 100 of those people are first responders. And so it does allow us to educate the public as well as serve that community. And the funds raised really support our tiers of education, advocacy, and research for all things related to lung health.
And we typically think of lung cancer affecting smokers, but not always, right?
That's right. Certainly, we know that smoking is a risk factor, but we are seeing more and more that folks are being diagnosed with lung cancer who are never smokers. We know that radon is a factor, and currently a lot of our research funding is working to understand what are the other factors in terms of behaviors or genetics, environment. So there's a lot of work still to be done to understand that, but certainly if you have lungs, you could be at risk.
Okay. So people can just show up Saturday morning and climb them stairs, right?
They can show
if
up.
If they want to take it on, they can do it.
The more the merrier. They can register now. Of course, they can show up on event day and join the party.
Wow. What tips do you have, Matt, to get all the way to the top? Frequent breaks, I assume.
Take your time one step at a time. It's a lot easier to go one step than to skip steps, and your knees and quads really start to get sore.
I bet they feel like they're on fire by the time you get to the top.
Yes, we're ready to take that stuff off when we're done.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I am so impressed that you're going to do this. Today is National Take the Stairs Day. So take the stairs today, park a little farther from the door wherever you go today, and then register for the Fight for Air Climb. It's coming up Saturday, February 1st at 8 a.m. at the downtown Bank of America Tower at 50 North Laura Street. Hundreds of people will scale more than 35 flights of stairs all the way to the top. You could be one of them. Great exercise and a great annual tradition in downtown Jacksonville. So thank you so much, Karen Hughes. She represents the American Lung Association, and Matt Kramer is with the Jacks Association of Firefighters. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks. Have a great day, Melissa.
And that's our show. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks to all of our guests and callers today. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Michelle Corum directs the show. Station news director is Jessica Palumbo, and Bill Bortsfield is our digital editor. We always appreciate your feedback. Keep those emails coming to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And if you missed anything this morning, catch our rebroadcast tonight at 8 o'clock. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect. We'll be back tomorrow at 9 a.m. Look forward to connecting with you then. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.